Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Podcast. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. All right, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really do appreciate it. You are here on a great, great day. We are going to be talking about the noise of depression and anxiety. The noise of depression. And really here, when I say the noise, I really frame it in this way because a lot of times people will talk about the medication treatment, the meds for depression and anxiety, like it's a crutch, like it's a weakness. And really, if we understand depression and anxiety as noise, then it really puts the medications in their proper place. And what I hope you'll see is it's not going to be a major part of the reason that you get better, that people get better from depression and anxiety. So we're going to be talking about the noise of depression and really an optimistic discussion today right here on The Healthy Mind. In the second half of the podcast, a lot of health news to go over. Reducing existential anxiety, kind of the stress and anxiety of life. You are not going to believe what medication, and I guarantee it's in your medicine cabinet right now, can help relieve that anxiety. Oh my goodness, I could not believe this story when I read it. And also, how some stress is actually good for you. Some amazing new research that was done looking at the positive effects of stress on the brain. Very exciting research. We'll do some headlines, and heck, we have got ourselves a great podcast, so I'm really happy that you're here today. So, are you ready? Let's begin. Okay, now, in talking about the noise of depression, before we go any further here, I want you to picture this, okay? I want you to picture yourself in a room somewhere and you are studying or reading. It could be in your kitchen, it could be at the library, it could be anywhere, but you're reading and you really want to focus on this. You want to learn something. Maybe you're studying for a test or it's just something interesting that you want to read. And all of a sudden, you start to hear this. Oh yeah, that's real. You have no idea what it is. But just as you sat down to read and got into it, there it is. Oh, and that just drives you bonkers, right? I mean, I just want to relax. I love the book I'm reading, or I've got to get ready for this test. And all of a sudden, and it's really impossible to focus, right? It's really impossible to focus. In fact, the longer this annoying noise goes on, at some point, I'm sitting here talking, and I bet you're finding it very hard to either hear me or focus on any thought. We've all been there, right? What do? You've got this noise that is just out of control, or it's bothering you, or it's a TV, or someone's yelling, or someone's not being quiet in the library while you're studying, and what do? You've got to stop, right? You've got to stop and either not do what you're doing or go somewhere else where it is quiet. Now, why do I Why do I give this example? Well, I think it illustrates very nicely in terms of how we need to begin to understand depression and anxiety, and in that, the role of specifically the medication treatment of these disorders. But why noise? Well, a lot of times when people come in, they feel either nervous or they feel that the medications are a crutch or that their depression or their anxiety is a weakness, that it's a flaw in their character, something that they can't overcome, that they're weak. And as I've said here many times on the podcast, the hardest thing in psychiatry, at least for me, is not figuring out how to get people better. For me, the hardest thing is making people feel comfortable with the fact that they need to be on some kind of treatment, that this isn't some kind of weakness or crutch or personality problem, that this is a real issue, a real disorder that needs to be treated. And I think as the science has progressed over the years, in terms of understanding not only how and why depression happens, but the effects of depression long term on our bodies, having nothing to do with our mood, but the effect it may have on our immune system or our inflammatory system or our cardiovascular system, people are really starting to understand and realize that there is somewhat of an urgency to get your depression and anxiety under control. But why noise? Why noise? Why do we say this? Well, to me, it seems like the very best analogy for understanding what depression and anxiety is. And if you think about it, it really is noise. Those mood states, depression and anxiety, they act like that noise you just heard when you are trying to read or study. It gets in the way, but it doesn't take away from who the person is, okay? Just like you're sitting there reading, you know how to read, or you're studying, and you know how to study and get ready for an exam. But if that noise gets in the way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how talented you are. It bothers you, it distracts you, and it takes away from you being able to accomplish and succeed and be happy. And in that same way, depression and anxiety can act as noise, and it gets in the way of people's happiness and their success and their ability to move through life. But when you take that away, when you're able to treat the depression and the anxiety, the noise lessens. Okay, now that makes perfect sense, right? If we understand depression and anxiety as noise and we do some kind of treatment, medications and therapy, the noise lessens. But here is the important part and really the most optimistic part. Once you get the noise out of the way, people thrive. People thrive. The meds are there for a purpose. They lower that noise, but people move forward in their lives because of their own strength, because of the strength and the resilience and the drive and the determination that is important to you, that you possess. Medications don't make you succeed in school. You have to do it. You have to pass those classes. Medications, antidepressants, and anti-anxiety agents, they don't make you succeed at work. You do that. You do that and get promoted and continue to be an important part of work and your workforce. The same thing happens with our personal life and family life. The antidepressants, Prozac, Paxil, whatever it may be, they don't make you have a successful marriage or a successful family. You do that. And it is so important for people to understand this because it takes away the idea that medications dominate the healing process. If we can understand that these medications and these treatments act to simply lower the noise, then people, their strength, their power, their resilience, that's what makes them succeed and thrive. Not the medications. They should never be seen that way. They are not the be-all and end-all. They're a part, and for some, it can be a very important part of their healing. But they're only that part, that part. The bulk of the healing is the work that people do, the work that they do to understand patterns in their life where they may undermine themselves or sabotage themselves, ways to look at themselves and challenge their negative thoughts and do that work to get better and then thrive. It is so important for me to get that message out and for people to understand that part about the medications. There's a lot of discussion about that and a lot of anti-psychiatry and the fact that these medications don't work or they're not important or whatever it may be. But these medications also save lives. And when we start to understand that part of the improvement in mood isn't just for the fact that you feel better emotionally, but there are very important, important biological, physiological, medical reasons and risks that are decreased when a person doesn't feel depressed and anxious, that we have to feel comfortable as it relates to all treatments of depression, whether they are alternative or therapy, or if they include some of the mainstream medications. But taking the medications does not mean that you are weak or that you can't do anything to make your life better. Quite the contrary. The role of the medications is to lower the noise. This. It lowers that. And when people get that noise out of the way, things begin to change. Life begins to improve. And their own natural resilience and strength and power takes over. And they continue to get better. Don't ever doubt how truly powerful you are. Because you are making those changes in your life if you suffer from depression or anxiety. You shoulder a lot of weight with these mood disorders. But your resilience is a testament to your strength. And it will carry the day. You will carry the day. And that, my friends, is a beautiful first step to take as we walk down our road to a healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, another very, very busy week of health news. This first story, though, I thought was really interesting. You know, we talk a lot here on the Healthy Mind about the negative consequences of stress, chronic stress. And we know that it can wreak havoc on our body, stress, with all of the changes that occur with cortisol being released and then the changes that can occur in the inflammatory system. Chronic stress has been linked to a host of medical problems, including hypertension, cardiovascular disease, even depression. But is all stress bad for you? And here the headline, Why Some Stress is Good for You. And this was new research that came out of the University of California at Berkeley. And what scientists there have found is that acute stress, short-lived, not anything chronic, may actually be good for us in the sense that it primes our brain for improved mental performance and acuity. And what these scientists did, these were rat studies that were done, but they subjected the rats to short-term stress, acute stress, and then they followed all different parts of their reactions to it in the blood, in the changes in their brain, and so on. And what they found was that a particular area of the brain known as the hippocampus, and we've talked about the hippocampus before here on The Healthy Mind, but for those of you that may be new to the program, the hippocampus is that part of the brain that is responsible for our memories. And what these scientists had found was that when we have an acute stress, something that happens right away and happens for a short period of time, as is typical, we get a huge release of stress hormone, cortisol. And what this does is it sends a cascade of reactions happening through our body. But what they found was one of the things that happened, now this had to be short-lived stress, acute stress, was that it released a bunch of chemicals that actually led to the hippocampus, that area of our brain that is responsible for memory, to increase in size. Now, you may be saying, what do you mean, Peter, it increases in size? Well, the hippocampus is one of only two areas in our entire brain that has the ability to regenerate cells. So what they found was some of the stem cells in these rats that can turn into all different types of cells, including nerve cells, when they were exposed to acute stress, they actually formed new brain cells and in the hippocampus, and it improved mental clarity and mental performance. And it's interesting because a few years ago, there were studies that had been done that looked at in humans the fact that as people start to improve from their depression, parts of the hippocampus can actually improve in size, and that the opposite, when we're depressed, you see a shrinking in the size of the hippocampus. Now, what's interesting is a few years ago, studies had been done that seemed to link depression and changes in the size of the hippocampus. This is in humans. So it's really, really interesting here that another study looking at acute stress here in rats shows a stimulation of these stem cells, which forms new brain cells in the hippocampus, and this results in increased mental clarity and performance. Now, another very interesting finding here was that when nerve cells were triggered to grow, when this acute stress occurred, it triggered the release of a protein known as fibroblast growth factor 2, FGF2. This protein is what caused those nerve cells to grow. The interesting part here is that FGF2 deficiency is shown to be associated with depressive-like behaviors, both in animals, and it's also linked to depression in human beings. Really interesting stuff here. So stress, some stress can be very, very bad for you when it's chronic stress. It can really affect the inflammatory system and lead to problems like hypertension and diabetes and depression. But acute stress, at least with what some of the researchers at the University of California, Berkeley have shown, is that acute stress, certain types, could potentially be positive in that they stimulate the formation literally of new brain cells. And as the lead researcher for this study, Dr. Daniela Koffer from the University of Cal Berkeley said, quote, "I think the ultimate message is an optimistic one. Stress can be something that makes you better, but it's a question of how much, how long, and how you interpret it or perceive it." The power of stress. We really associate it always as negative. Well, here is a study that suggests that acute stress may actually be good for your brain. Okay, well, now this next study, oh my goodness, when I first read it, I almost did a double take, but I just had to keep reading it, and I had to include it on this week's podcast. The headline, "Reducing Existential Anxiety." With Tylenol? Oh yeah, with Tylenol. A new University of British Columbia study has found a potential new use for Tylenol, acetaminophen, the over-the-counter pain reliever. They found that it may actually reduce the psychological effects of fear and anxiety, especially as it relates to the angst and dread over the human condition. Amazing. It brought relief to existential anxiety. And the study is published in the journal Psychological Science. Now, the lead author, Dr. Dan Randles, from the University of British Columbia, said, quote, "Pain exists in many forms, including the distress that people feel when exposed to thoughts of existential uncertainty and death. Our study suggests that these anxieties may be processed as pain by the brain, but Tylenol seems to inhibit the signal telling the brain that something is wrong." End of quotes. Unbelievable. Now, those of you who are regular listeners of the Healthy Mind podcast know that my particular area of interest and approach to therapy is existential psychotherapy. And I do a lot of work with individuals understanding some of these existential anxieties and how they lead to all of our behavior. And here, Tylenol is easing some of that existential angst. Now, you say, okay, well, a freak study, right? Wrong. This study builds on another study that was done almost a year ago that found that Tylenol, acetaminophen, can reduce the non-physical pain of being ostracized from our friends. Psychological issues, psychological pain. Another study shows that Tylenol may be helpful. And it was really that study that motivated some of this research at the University of British Columbia to see, well, are there other types of psychological pain that Tylenol may relieve? Now, what did they do in the study? Well, the participants took either Tylenol or a placebo while they were doing various types of tasks to evoke this kind of anxiety, this existential angst. And compared to a placebo group, the researchers found that the people taking Tylenol were significantly better able to cope with these types of anxieties. And these results, really, they suggest that the people in the study, their existential suffering was actually helped or treated with a headache drug, Tylenol. Now, before I go any further, let me just say, this is a study. There has to be much more research on Tylenol to see if it actually helps. I'm not suggesting that you go out and take Tylenol to relieve your anxiety. This is just news, information, but it was pretty amazing. Now, back to Dr. Randall's quote, that a drug used primarily to alleviate headaches may also numb people to the worry of thoughts of their deaths or to the uneasiness of watching a surrealist film is a surprising and very interesting study. Yeah, no kidding. Tylenol, acetaminophen. Not just good for headaches, but at least in this University of British Columbia study, it may actually ease the pain of existential angst and dread. Just amazing.
Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines.
Okay, the first headline. Aerobic exercise may protect cognitive abilities of heavy drinkers. Aerobic exercise may help prevent and perhaps even reverse some of the brain damage that's associated with heavy alcohol consumption. This, according to a new University of Colorado Boulder study. The next headline. Parents can help their children avoid alcohol pitfalls during the transition from high school to college. The transition from high school to college is a particularly vulnerable time for alcohol experimentation.
a new study looks at which student characteristics may enhance parent-based intervention, what parents can do. And the results in this study indicate that teens who perceive their friends as more approving of alcohol consumption also seem to be more influenced by communication with their parents about drinking. Fascinating. And finally, stimulating the brain blunts cigarette craving. Now, we all know cigarette smoking is the leading cause of preventable deaths globally. And smoking cessation treatments, they're just miserable, miserable in their outcomes, with more than 90% of attempts resulting in relapse. Well, a new study published in Biological Psychiatry reports that a single 15-minute session of high-frequency transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, a new treatment for depression, over the front part of the brain known as the prefrontal cortex, reduced cue-inducing smoking craving in nicotine-dependent individuals, stimulating the brain to take care of your smoking addiction. Wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is just about going to do it for this week's podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. If you enjoy the podcast and you could do it, I would really appreciate it if you took time to rate the podcast at iTunes. You have no idea how that moves my ranking. Just one rating of the podcast makes such a difference. If you enjoy the podcast, I would really, really appreciate your help there. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com, and I tweet at Dr. Zafiridis, and any questions, comments, please keep them coming. They are absolutely lovely. You can reach me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.